bring in Michael Grange of Sportsnet, who's in Milwaukee. How you doing, Grange?
Oh, I'm good, guys. I'm good. Just trying to navigate the stormy waters.
What, Mike, just a very simple question for you. What the hell happened?
I think the Raptors, I think the environment that they found themselves in last night, I think they were rattled. I think,
really?
I think it was a really, really loud, I would say a more raucous environment than you had in Toronto in the first two games. And that was sort of the consensus of most of us who were at both venues. And, in a perfect world, I think, the young Milwaukee Bucks would have kind of been over-adrenalized and kind of got away from themselves a little bit. And the poised veteran Raptors would have kind of taken pleasure in silencing the crowd. And it was the opposite. It's really interesting. You look at the first three, four, five possessions of the game, which is, kind of crazy to do, but there was no clear, obvious path, evolving. The Bucks were kind of sloppy in mishandling the ball, and I think Jason Kidd called a timeout like a minute or two into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raptors are sort of doing the same. And the Bucks found themselves, calmed themselves, and what I saw was just to, from the Raptors' point of view, it was just really simple, basic things that they weren't doing. I mean, I'm talking like throwing passes on target, catching passes that were on target. And it just kind of, these little mistakes added up and it just became a wave. And I guess if it was their one specific thing, you'd look at Chris Middleton. He got off really fast, really early. Well, who's guarding him? DeMar DeRozan. But once it got away from them a little bit, it got really ugly really fast, as you guys both know.
These guys, but Mike, this is a team that's been in intimidating situations before in the postseason, where the core group of this team. It's a team that has fallen behind a zillion times and come back, right? That's almost the hallmark of this team. They don't panic when they fall behind. And I'm sure you looked up at the scoreboard at the end of the first quarter and said, man, I can't believe those numbers. But, they are kind of unbelievable numbers. But it's, I guess the shocking part is, maybe not that they fell behind or not that a home team played with crazy energy with that kind of crowd behind them. Or maybe that's, I'd be a little shocked if the Raptors were gobsmacked. I know a Tuesday night in Milwaukee in November, it's probably a little different than it was last night. But I think it's maybe the way that it was a complete unraveling, that there was no fight back. There was no comeback. There was no, let's start chipping away. It was just a tidal wave. And that's, to me, that is surprising.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the second element to all of this, the circumstances were part of it. But you look at this series now, and in three games, so you've had six halves of basketball, if my math is correct. And in two of those halves, the Raptors have scored seven field goals. So the first half the second half of game one and the first half of game three. And I would argue that's a pretty significant sample size. and what it's emerging and suggesting, and you almost have to be foolish not to conclude, is the Bucks are a better team. That could be, is that because the Bucks are actually a really good team and they're just ascending and they've sort of just found themselves at the right time? And we've all seen this in sports, right? A young player or young team, whatever, they have this capacity to improve at a rapid rate, almost exponentially overnight sometimes. Mm-hmm. That could be the case. Or the other element could just be, is this particular matchup versus what the Raptors have to offer, as I would argue a good team, is kryptonite. And when mm-hmm. you look at the kind of length that they can throw at DeMar DeRozan and the quickness they have, the advantage of it at various positions, that's the one thing I'm not entirely certain about. It could be a combination of both. But right now, through three games, what happened last night wasn't exactly an aberration. It was an exaggeration of a trend.
That's a really good point. And you know, and I'm also, look, I'm not going to hammer this point to death, but again, Jason Kidd, no, I think he knows a little something about Dwayne Casey and the way Dwayne Casey coaches. And, you know, I'm watching that game last night and I'm going, what the hell's Michael Beasley doing on the court? You know, like, why?
Well, I mean, yeah, full credit to Kidd. I mean, he's been pretty flexible and pretty quick within games to do some different things. You know, he played Teletovic a little bit, I think, in game one, and then went completely away from him later mm-hmm. in the series. He sat Tony Snell, I think, in the fourth quarter of
yep.
game two,
mm-hmm.
You know, when the Bucks came back. And, you know, and then last night Beasley comes out of nowhere and he kind of poured all the gasoline on the fire. So he's been quick to kind of make some adjustments within the game. And you know, the standard criticism almost of Dwayne Casey is that he's not a great in-game adjustments coach. We certainly haven't seen a lot of adjustments that have been meaningful so far in three games. We've seen adjustments between games. But I'm not going to put this all at Casey's feet in the sense that, you know, right now you've got two guys who are all-stars and considered among the top tier in the NBA at their positions in DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. And, you know, part of the job description when you're in that echelon is to be able to thwart game plans.
Yeah.
And to be able to, you know, when confronted with a strategy designed to take away your strength, to figure out a way to solve it. And sometimes it's with force, sometimes it's with just being quicker in your decision-making, whatever it might be. But, you know, so if you're Dwayne Casey and DeMar DeRozan, you know, is consistently struggling with against the defenses he's facing, and he's a veteran player and he's been in this situation over and over again, similarly with Kyle Lowry, I'm not sure what you do if your main guys can be taken out of a game.
Yeah. Well, that's
– yeah, that is – if your main guys aren't making open shots or –
well, your secondary guys have to make open shots.
Yeah.
Like that's,
how do you coach that? How do you coach that?
Right. You know, and I would say, like, defensively, have the Raptors been horrible in this series? Not really. I mean, the Nets have, you know, they haven't really. I mean, I think from the three-point line, the Nets, like, that's the – the Bucks have certainly thrived at a level that you wouldn't want to see, but it's an issue. I mean, they've got some issues. There's no doubt about it.
Sometimes, Mike, you know, if a team loses in a, you know, you get a beat down in a best of seven, it's kind of like a palate cleanser, right? It's, you know, you can almost say, okay, that's it, and that's done, and you know, it wasn't close, and there's nothing, you know, but it's
like
over.
That Sharks game in the NHL, yeah, 7-0 over
yeah,
the Oilers.
Move on. Yeah.
Yeah, so you move on, right? It's a reset moment. But, you know, the way you're talking, Mike, it's more than kind of an emotional reset that these guys need here, right? That you know, there's certain that the equation in this series maybe is kind of beyond that.
It could be. I mean, like, I wouldn't have been saying the same thing after game two. I mean, I know, Jeff, you weren't as convinced. I thought game two showed, gave the Raptors a path or a blueprint that they could follow and you know, so I was fairly optimistic going into game three on the Raptors' behalf. But, you know, the Bucks right now, they just look longer, quicker. They're getting to loose balls. And to the extent that DeRozan or Lowry can get to the rim, they're not really succeeding when they get there. Like, there always seems to be an extra hand there. They always seem to be getting there kind of off step. And, you know, and that's, again, to the credit to the Bucks' defense. Like, so I'm not sure how that changes. Like, that's a fairly sustainable thing through three games, is the Bucks have been by far the better defensive team. And they do have by far the best player. Like,
yeah.
Giannis Antetokounmpo is just this force of nature. He's not at LeBron James level yet. Like, you know, there's, as we've seen last night with what LeBron did the second half, like, like, Giannis doesn't quite have that ability to take over games offensively. But he absolutely takes over games in every other element,
mm-hmm.
along with contributing some offense. And, you know, and I think that he's in their heads. I think Maker, shockingly, this kid was playing high school basketball outside Toronto a year ago.
Yeah.
And he was better than anything the Raptors were putting on the floor last night. And, if you know, despite the blame around a little bit, you look at Jonas Valanciunas, he should have an advantage at both center positions, arguably, against Monroe and against Maker, and he's just getting murdered. So, you know, if you're doing Casey, I'm not sure which button you press next.
Yeah, you know, like it seems to me that, you know, I don't think the Bucks are going to play worse than, you know, barring an injury, you know, barring somebody getting hurt and then, you know, the domino starting to tumble. You know, a young team, loads of confidence. They have some, you know, that and well coached, and it the question is whether the Raptors can play better, you know, and level it that way. I think any notion that kind of the Bucks are not up to this is, we can erase that now. So can the Raptors play better enough to to create some doubt there at least?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say the one thing that, you know, you might want to cling to is, I think the Bucks right now are shooting 46% from three in the playoffs through three games. And this is a team that shot 37% in the regular season. Mind you, the Raptors have never really been a great perimeter defending team. That is a team defending against the three. But 46%, anytime a team shoots at that level, it makes everything look worse, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yeah.
You're getting a three-run home run every third inning, you know, like it's just impossible. It just distorts the whole picture. So that'd be one thing that you'd want. Of course, the reason they're shooting that well is because they're collapsing so hard on Antetokounmpo. But if they can, I'm getting really good at saying his name, by the way.
Yeah, you are.
Well, everybody is. And unfortunately, in this city, I think we're all getting better at it.
Yeah, no, I've come a long way. But that'd be one thing is, you know, if the Bucks all of a sudden regress to, you know, something close to their average or below, you know, that would really change the picture a little bit and you know, give the Raptors some breathing room. But this is, I mean, I heard you guys talking off the top. This is absolutely a test of everything the Raptors stand for going into game four. There is zero room for error. They lose game four. They are going to lose the series, I would predict, going way out on a limb there. And at that point, you've got, Masai Ujiri is looking at a roster that on paper shows tons of promise, but has clearly got some flaws. And, you know, how do you reshape that? How do you invest in that? And where do you go from there? There's all sorts of huge questions that would flow from that.
Oh, I agree with you completely. I mean, I think last night, and I'm not throwing this all on Kyle Lowry, I think people in this city, they won't give DeMar a pass, but DeMar's here. And that's, you know, we're okay with that. But boy, I think you can have a real debate. If you're the Raptors and you're trying to figure out, if I'm the Raptors, I should say, Mike, and I'm trying to figure out whether I want Serge Ibaka or Kyle Lowry back, and I understand there are other factors involved in that decision, but if I boil it down to that, right now, I'm probably taking Ibaka.
It's shocking to say that, but you're not far wrong. I think, you know, the issue with bringing Lowry back is at what price, what term, because the idea of him being a guy you would just hand over 5 years and $200 million to at this point would be, I think most people would agree, is a bit foolish.
Yep.
Right?
Because, yeah, 100%.
You can, you know, and that's no disrespect to the guy. I mean, he is an awesome player. He's probably underrated for his total contributions on the floor, at least in the broader NBA landscape. But, you know, I think he's one of those guys who he's got to be as good as he can be. He's always at his limit. And then I think when the circumstances get, you know, when you're playing better teams and better game plans and the rest, you know, I'm not sure, we haven't seen in the playoffs that he can regularly find another gear that can elevate his team on a, you know, consistent basis. I mean, he'll do it game in, you know, here and there, but he's proven, you know, he's played, 34 or five playoff games with the Raptors, I think. He's proven that he can be taken out of a game.
Well,
if you're a max player, a five-year, $200 million guy, that is going to going to happen once in a while, but it cannot happen, every other game, which is sort of the pattern.
And, and I know people are going to say, okay, great, now go find a point guard. And, I don't pretend to think that Corey Joseph can be the guy. I don't know about DeLon Wright, not next year maybe, but my counter argument to that would be, I don't know, maybe there's another Malcolm Brogdon out there,
Well, that's it. I mean, and it always, it's funny with the Raptors and Masai Ujiri, it always comes back to like the original, kind of the creation theory, right? Which is pretty much an accident, they've come a really long way, from a team that was supposed to be broken up way, way back. And it's only when you look at it, only recently as Ujiri, even this year, really, has Ujiri invested heavily in kind of fortifying that core that was always a little bit certainly suspect. And then the interesting contrast with the Bucks is there's a team that had a philosophy, knew exactly, what they wanted to do in terms of drafting players and this real commitment to length and multi-positionality and all that kind of stuff. And so you just kind of wonder if all this was to end suddenly and in a bloody mess, would it be a signal or an opportunity for Ujiri to kind of go, now it's time for me to build a team in my image, which would be pretty drastic, but wouldn't entirely shock me.
Have you found a place to watch the game tonight?
I'm actually going to go to Madison, Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a nephew who is in his second year at University of Wisconsin, and I'm going to go and hang out with him, and he's a huge Leafs fan, so that should be fun.
So you're going to
It'd be fun anyway.
You're going to go to basically what you're telling us, Grange, is you're going to go to a college party on a Friday night. Like, there's a fraternity involved here, isn't there?
As far as I know, there's no fraternity.
You're backpedaling.
I've kind of reviewed these things in my mind, and I don't think my nephew needs to see. I think I'll opt to be the responsible adult.
There you go.
Well done.
You're going to treat your nephew?
There's no need for my nephew to know the real me. We'll keep that illusion intact.
All right, Granger, we appreciate you doing this. Drive safely to Madison.
Thank you. See you guys.